Get in here and shut the door. No, Anya, you'll probably hear about the tiny bookcase. It's normally why people show up. But we seem to have a spot of bother. All the gathered horrors of this world seem to be converging on myself and anything magical I have, including my crystal ball. Give me a moment. Drongo, dingo, salapisha, eat lightning bolt, dog face! Now, join me by my crystal ball. I believe the adventurers I've sent out are in a spot of bother. If you know any magic, do feel free to help.
It's a bit strange, isn't it?
Sorry, what?
Us two being the only ones in here, I mean. I've left some coins on the bar, but I poured these myself.
Oh, thank the twice-crowned ghost! I found you!
Everything all right?
No! No, things are pretty bloody far from all right. These damn specters think they can muscle in on my magic!
That sounds like a you problem.
Far from it! Do you think it is by chance that the ghouls outside have yet to barge in and eat you like the mannerless dogs that you are?
He's right, you know. They appear to be bouncing off whenever they run close.
Bugger.
Bugger is right, young fellow, my lad. What is the name of this place? It may help me strengthen the spell.
Carpe Cormium.
Fitting. But on such a night, I need your stories to supplement my strength.
Right, so put the beer down, Ben. This is serious.
Hey, that's a good prompt. Put that down.
Once more unto the breach. Alright, now turn the dial that says compression so the arrow points at the maximum hull pressure. Great, great. Now last thing, the switch that says seal ventilation. Put that down. Obediently, I spin the dial to the instructed point and reach for the heavy hazard-striped switch. Grasping it between my forefinger and thumb, I pull, but it doesn't give. Instinctively, I wrap it in my hand and tug. With a thud, it slides into a downward position. A series of clanks begin to echo through the ship. Some boom close as the shutters around the bridge close. Others clank in the distance, memories of the slamming metal rolling cacophonously around our zero-G casket. Well done, Alicia. You have successfully sealed our ship against all threats. Hernandez's smile is wide and genuine. He meets me with the proud gaze of a father watching a child take their first wobbling journey on a bicycle. I only know about bicycles because of something some of the older crew members say. Just like riding a bicycle. There's no space in the Light of Norway for someone to ride a wheeled contraption. It most likely would not function, given the atmospheric constraints, anyway. I remember when they tried to explain gravity to me. I was perhaps 5 years old, an old-fashioned concept that the crewmates had forced onto me. The logic behind periods of 24 hours being logged to 365 was completely lost on me. When they described the force that stuck you to surfaces, pulled without pulling and wouldn't let you escape and float freely, it sounded horrible. For all of my 16 years, I've been aboard the Light. I don't remember much of the early time. Crew members told me I was a miracle, that they didn't think there would be children anymore. Yet there I was. The man they believed to have been my father had been jettisoned. My mother had no memory of taking his company, and had therefore never given consent. Humanity's future had no place for such a demented individual. He'd been cast into the endless void of space, leaving only his errant seed behind. My mother died in childbirth. Producing an infant was extremely difficult, with nothing to hold the mother to the bed. When I watched the footage, the strange atmospheric pressure shifts that the ship experiences drew blood in great surging pumps from my mother's opening. She had been sucked dry by the ship. So I had become the ship's child. Knowledge imparted by the remaining dregs of mankind was my sustenance. They'd shown me simple things, and I ate that wisdom up, and they called me a prodigy. I wanted to know how to fly the home, how to choose where its nose pointed, how to choose whether everyone was protected. I'd found it hard to hide at first. Of course, context clues gave me the tools I'd need to stay safe and secure. They were concerned when I didn't sleep, so I'd lay with my eyes shut as long as possible, until they said, "She slept right through! What an angel!" Every time I misstepped, I'd find ways for them to excuse it. It always came back to the same thing. Poor girl, never set foot on Earth. No wonder she's a bit... odd. They always spoke in hushed tones. I didn't care. I figured out which things they liked, and I did those things. I listened to them talk about the beach and about the theater. I indulged them as they played me films that were important. I stared straight at Citizen Kane and exclaimed how marvelous it was, and they beamed. But now I stand on the bridge. It is very late, and Hernandez is asleep. I run my hands over the intricate controls and smile because, after all this time, I know what they do. I take the big switch and I push it up. The thuds begin. They rattle their way up and down the ship. Some of the people will wake now. Let them come. For the first time in 16 years, I let my mind reach out, and I feel those of my kin reach back. Parasite, they call us. Invasive. They simply do not understand that they are food, and we are hungry. I can hear running footsteps now, and recognize the stink of Hernandez appearing behind me on the bridge. What are you? I don't let him finish. He's going to be my first. I have been very patient. The shock in his eyes as my fingers reach through his sternum and begin to spread through his system is an inexplicable delight to me. With slow, sticky sounds, I watch his head begin to bulge before it finds its own seams and splits along them. He doesn't have that proud smile now. I throw my head back and begin the keening song that calls to my siblings. I feel them now, as they squeeze through the gaps I've made in this prison. We are hungry. They are food.
They are food. Like it. Ah. Oh. So I'm fairly sure we should probably see whether anybody else can tally this up, but I'm fairly sure you say the word seed in most of your stories. And it's fantastic.
I'm going to say I'm a gardener, a literary gardener.
You're a literary gardener.
Nothing but seed.
I really like the turn of phrase about the how his head found its seams and then burst. That felt really... strong. That was a really good turn of phrase.
It was a weird thing to describe because, you know, I thought about what I wanted it to look like, and that was what it seemed like something coming apart at the seams. And I thought, well, I suppose everything will find a seam if you put enough pressure in it. That's why things burst.
Yeah, it really strikes you immediately. It's definitely a really good use of language. Found the whole thing to be very creepy. I like science fiction. Horror in space is, it's like horror in a submarine, I think. Like,
yes.
It's just because you're in a pressurized environment that outside is death. it raises the stakes automatically. You know, you can't go over to the next town to the pleasant and kind sheriff or whatever. You know, there's no way out. And to see it from her point of view as well, this mysterious alien being. Do you have an idea of like what they are in space? These things that work?
Weirdly, this came from I saw a video of a guy who rescues shrimp.
Oh,
and he gets them out of the ground, and they have these big parasites that sit in their gills, and they grow bigger and bigger until eventually they fill the entire gill, and they are absorbing all of the oxygen that the shrimp pulls in.
That's gross.
Yeah, it's horrifying. But the thought of this, I mean, I could write a story about what happened to man and why they thought there would be no more children, but I felt like it was so much scarier not having that in there, because you're already on the back foot as the reader, because I'm assuming everyone who listens to this is human and maybe the odd dog or cat, but they're not putting it on. Abusing dogs with shuffle.
Oh, poor old Hernandez. Oh
yeah, nice guy.
But I like the undercurrent, like, you know, obviously because they've found it in them to commit fairly permanent murder as well by jettisoning the father.
Yeah.
So it leaves some tangling, entangling questions dangling, doesn't it? About why is humanity here? What are they doing? The fact that it's called the Light of Norway, I think was the name of the ship,
yes,
shows that it's at some point in Earth's future. Possibly, like in my head, it was like a generation ship. But then that didn't quite make sense because of the lack of children being born. So, you know, why are children not being born? So maybe just deep space exploration.
I think my
icy pods.
The theory was that they were sort of out, and that the idea was that these are all people who weren't intended to breed, theoretically, like maybe couldn't, and their job was to find somewhere to be terraformed, and that they had thought they'd never see a child again in their lifetime because they were going to spend the next 30 years in space, transmit a signal back, and die somewhere old.
Oh. What would be worse in that situation? Like, just sort of drifting in space endlessly, not finding anywhere, and eventually you all tear each other apart and die from lack of supplies, or find somewhere that is theoretically inhabitable, and then, you know, like, plant the flag, do all that kind of stuff, and then just realise that there's just nothing for you.
Yeah.
I think it depends on your sort of philosophical outlook, doesn't it? Because if where you're getting your meaning from your life from is in what you do, what you perceive, what, you know, how you experience your existence, then it's sort of fine, isn't it?
Yeah.
But I think for a lot of people, they glean a lot of value from passing things on. I mean, I guess they passing on a planet in that sense, aren't they? Oh, yeah, I liked it. So. I feel like it could be expanded, and we could get more stories from that particular sci-fi endeavor.
We're going to end up writing a sci-fi thing at some point. We keep writing sci-fi. We're just going to write a...
Yeah. Mine's actually not sci-fi.
Oh.
Yeah.
Let's have it. Bring me the spook.
I feel like there are going to be some comparisons to be drawn here as well. So.
Okay.
We'll have to see. Put that down. She considered what to do next while sat on the toilet. Around her, the pale green bathroom seemed to pulse with the desire to be cleaned. It would have to wait until she was finished. Her thoughts turned again to him. He had been awful as a child, a constant problem that she had felt unable to handle. It had started with the first time he had put himself in danger. He had managed, despite all reason and chance, to pick up a kettle before he could even stand. She had felt her stomach explode with fear as he began to tip it towards himself with a baby's clumsiness. She had screamed at him to put that down as she ran. He had looked at her and she had seen the first signs of the problem. His dark eyes had held her gaze as the freshly boiled water poured over his shoulder and down his back. The situation had only grown worse as he'd increased in size, vocabulary, and will. Their voices would clash regularly as she resorted to more and more desperate methods of assertion. She had felt that had she had any other children, he would have stuck out like a cuckoo. She thought perhaps there had been something inherently wrong with their choice of the father. She knew that she would have liked more of them. The increase in sample size would have garnered a wider frame for her reference. She had been alone, the weight of controlling and moulding the boy stacked upon her neck. Her own skills in life were fortunately sharp, carving deep into industries and social circles, despite the lodestone. However, the successes were undercut by the fundamental problem. The fear of what he might go on to do, who he would do it to. It all sat with her, on buses, and struck her midway through relaxing pursuits. That there had been normal failures was a given fact. No one ever fired clay for the first time without cracking it. From her fingertips to her elbows, she had been coated in the mess of rearing. And she knew she was unable to be any other way. She had felt his shape evolve and mutate under her efforts. His dead eyes stared back at her with every attempt to find light and happiness. There had come a time when she knew the task was beyond her. She became aware that all of her efforts had simply equipped him with the opposed mental defences to resist her and what she stood for. She began to suspect that the time he spent alone and away from home was filled with tenebrous acts. Lying in bed, alone in the house, she imagined his face lighting in a rare smile, with blood on his teeth. It was somehow worse when he was in the house, as the fear began to be for herself. The apprehension she felt for his adult life had become constant. Standing up from the toilet, she reached out and pressed the lever downwards. The obstreperous noise of the flush filled the room as she stepped towards the tub. It had been a similar green to the walls, like an unripe avocado. The grime of years had left a waterline, which was now exceeded by the thick liquid. His eyes stared up at her from the meat that had been him. She had taken great pains to carefully segment the sections before further breaking down the joints and mincing the muscles. It had seemed obvious to reduce him to fundamentals before she could begin. Of course, she would not need it all. She had discarded the penis, for she felt instinctively she would have more luck without it. She had felt through the grey skull matter, letting her fingers decide what was rotten before letting it fall to the musty bath mat. The raw flesh of her creation was now ready to be moulded. She plunged her hands in and began shaping. The work went on for hours, the steady clack of the staple gun holding in sections of flesh sacking where she had decided that they would need to be. Then the hiss of the glue gun making the sections blood tight. She needed no sleep. The first birth had been difficult, but this second one challenged her in a different way. With every strong-thumbed movement, she held in her mind her goal, radiating that positivity into the form as it took shape before her. Finally, her labour came to an end. She looked upon her child and stroked its chest above where she had buried its heart. It had yet to beat, but she knew it would soon. She leaned into the awful-scented tub and placed an affectionate kiss on the reshaped face. She waited. And waited.
Good grief. The most visceral thing in there, I have to say, was the phrase awful-scented tub.
Well, you've never spent time in an awful-scented tub, Nick.
I mean, I've eaten a lot of haggis. Does that count?
Yes. I'm going to say yes. It depends if you've been eating it in the bath, I guess.
Not to my memory, no. That was, absolutely horrible. Thank you.
Well, I thought I'd give you one back after that fucking ape story.
We did actually have someone tweet at us about that, didn't they? Saying they'd been horrified by it. So,
I think yay me. Yeah.
Could never have topped that for Halloween.
Oh, no. This is actually based quite strongly off a nightmare I had about 5 years ago.
Really?
Yeah.
Go on.
Well, it's pretty much as it was, except I was sentient in the bath.
Oh. I thought you were making the...
No, not at all. No, it was happening to me. I used to, when I was from when I was about like 13 or something through till early 20s, I had near constant, like every other night or so, nightmares of being dismembered whilst being aware of it. Yeah. And then it went away for a few years, and then it came back with this one dream, and then it's not happened since.
It's weird, because I've had a recurring dream for a lot of my life where I'm dissected medically.
Oh.
As though they're looking for something, and then they put me back together. As I've got older, it's become more detailed. As I know more about anatomy, that dream has become way worse.
I wonder if you were to give some sort of crackpot Freudian interpretation of that as wanting not wanting to be like discovered in some way. Some kind of defense mechanism that if somebody's like taking you apart, then they're going to find stuff out about you.
So on your story,
yes,
the obviously there's a bit of a Frankenstein vibe.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
I also got a lot of I don't know if you've even watched it, but there's an anime called Full Metal Alchemist.
I have not.
And a big portion of that is if there is something of equivalent value. So if you had all the pieces of a radio, but like a pot of sodium and an iron, bit of iron ore and some wood, you could create a circle that would allow you to make that into a radio immediately through alchemy. And they try, like trying to make a person is forbidden alchemy. And even if you get all the right stuff there, trying to make a person will never result in a person. Because there is something to a person beyond just the chemical makeup.
Mm.
And it had that... I got that same vibe, that kind of horrible...
Yeah, that's a really cool idea. I guess like stuff like flesh golems and stuff is, as you say, you know, it comes from... Well, I don't know whether it comes from Frankenstein, but it's certainly something that you can see elsewhere. Yeah, truly creepy, I think. Like... anything where someone's trying to make life not through traditional methods, it's can get kind of spooky, I think.
Good turn as well, because I thought the kid was going to do something horrible. And then,
oh, I'm glad, know. Yeah, yeah. The I think that needs to be believable in order for it to work. You know, that her fear, it might not be unfounded. I should point out, like, my mum is actually quite lovely. So this isn't indicative. But the bit with the kettle is something that did actually happen to me as well.
You poured a kettle on yourself.
I poured a kettle on myself.
Dreadful as a brute.
Like I somehow got out of like the high chair thing, climbed up onto a counter, and managed to pour a kettle onto myself. I don't know whether that sort of
oh my God.
Like obviously in this story it's indicative of like an underlying like rebellious evil, isn't it? But I think in real life it was just an act of Darwinism.
Happy Halloween. Wow. I did actually feel like I should mention our prompt that we've got this time, put that down, came from some of you lovelies out there. It was a Twitter vote.
And a Facebook poll, actually.
And we
combined the two into a
We spread Ultimate. Our bets.
We did. The other one would have been... what was it called? Prima Donna was going to be the other one.
Oh, it was.
That was that came in second place. The feedback, like we actually got really good engagement, and it was really awesome to see that people wanted to take part in getting the prompts together. I think we're definitely at a stage where we're thinking for... In the next season, going out to you all and getting some ideas for prompts. So, if you are listening to this and you'd like to give us a prompt, then message us on our socials, whether that's Instagram, Facebook, or Twitter. You can tweet it at us or just DM us, whichever one you want to do, and we'll put them all into a pot and start stirring up some stories.
Just come to us anyway. We like hearing from you. Especially thank you to the couple of lovelies that pointed out that I had made a bit of a snafu with some editing in a previous episode. But that, you know, you saved us as a community. You came together and helped us to fix a thing. So thank you. We love you all.
That, That was really cool, actually, yeah. There wasn't anybody sort of complaining about it. They were just like, oh, hi, guys, you might want to fix this. That was really positive. It was really nice.
Okay, but the thing is, we don't have a guest today, apart from the specters that surround us in every waking moment.
No guest. It's just like episode one. It's just the two of us.
Just celebrating that spooky time of year.
We do like spook.
But we got some spooky questions, haven't we?
We've decided to, yeah, rather than just ask ourselves the same questions again, because not a huge amount, I can't imagine, has changed over the last few months.
But Ben, what's your favourite book?
we've had some really fun guests as well, and so a lot of them have been people that are quite close to us or new acquaintances, especially for me. And it's been really fun interviewing them. But we're gonna give ourselves some stuff to answer. So, do you want to? Shall I go first, Nick? And I'll ask you.
Oh, go on.
Yep. Have you got any superstitions?
Oh, actually, yes. I've got a couple, but they're all theatre ones. So we say the Scottish play.
Okay, instead of Macbeth.
No, we say the Scottish play. you know the old adage of it's bad luck to say good luck on opening night.
Okay, and you actually observe these for what do you fear will happen?
It's not even fear. It's just tradition. Like, you don't want to be the one that broke the tradition, because then if something did go wrong, people would blame you. I think that's why I do it. You know, if so the set caught fire, they'd be like, "That's you." You know, you're cursed.
It's like a herd mentality, group reinforced tradition. Then,
yeah, like religion.
Like, you got me.
I'm gonna have to throw in a fun fact here. You know, break a leg.
Right, yes.
It's so the leg is actually the crank used to open and close the curtains.
Oh.
And we know in the early days of theatre, it was like a cheap bit of tin. And repeated use would cause them to snap. So break a leg was, I hope you get so many encores that they have to keep opening and closing the curtains and the leg snaps.
That is really cool.
And that's where we get break a leg from.
I really like that. I don't have any fun facts to go along with mine. But I do have some superstitions.
Your superstitions, what are they?
So, I do actually touch wood.
Okay. Like,
so, but it largely comes from me, like, it's just like a verbal tick.
Yeah.
And I'll say touch wood and then sort of cast aimlessly about myself to look for some wood.
Do you do the thing where you touch your head if you can't find wood?
No.
I know a lot of people that do that. Yeah.
Oh, wow. Well, I think I just graduated to level two of touch wood. that's a bit of a weird one. I looking back, because I'm not a superstitious person, I wouldn't say. But I do observe that one. Whenever I say it, whenever somebody else says it, or it's only if I've accidentally said it that I then have to go and do it. And then the other one, which was more when I was a kid, really, was if you step on a crack, you'll break your mother's back one.
Yeah.
So, I think if you spend a lot of time walking to and from school as a kid, cause especially if you live in the middle of bumfuck nowhere, which is where I lived when I was growing up, there's quite a lot of cracks in the pavement and stuff. So it actually can become quite like a fun game for a kid that doesn't have a phone or
any or kind is of scared like, that his mum will melt him in a bath. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, there's that too. Yeah. but you end up playing like hopscotch most of the way home.
Yeah.
So that was sort of like it was more of a fun thing, really. I was never sort of like, I was never in a situation where I would like step on a crack and then be like, must call.
I used to observe loads of them, like never walking under a ladder, closing your eyes when you walk between the legs of a street sign, all these weird little ticks, basically.
I do the ladder one where possible, because
because it's unsafe to walk under a ladder.
Yeah, that's why I do it, because like, yeah, I don't know. The amount of times I walk past a building site and you just see like a little I actually don't know the technical term, but the kind of the brace that joins scaffolding together. You know, when they're taking those apart, and the guys that do them, they're so proficient in what they do. They're like 30 feet up. They're taking scaffolding apart, and they throw them off and they land
into the buckets.
In the buckets.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, if anybody's doing that anywhere fucking near me, like I'm not gonna step under where they're doing it. That's just, I'm just not gonna trust somebody that I don't know to that degree.
So, some Final Destination shit, man.
Yeah, but definitely.
Go on. I'm gonna move us on. You Ben has written these questions.
You might be able to tell because they're a little bit drier than questions Nick would have asked, I think.
I'm covered across them again. Oh man, I have no idea. So Ben, Ben, what's your favourite horror-themed song?
So I can't take full credit for these questions because I did sort of amalgamate various extremely sad Halloween like conversation starter type pages. I can only assume they're for people that are at parties and they don't know how to engage about the subject. But anyway, actually, see my answer. I've no idea how I came across this, but you know, I said earlier, like, I didn't grow up with like a phone when I was in the middle of nowhere, really. So yeah. the first thing I had was it was like a beaten up old iPod. So, you know, like just music, basically. I think they had some games on them, yeah. And I like randomly got a bunch of tracks through iTunes then. And one of the tracks was Helena by the Misfits. Misfits. And it's a bit of a weird song, but it's effectively... I think there's something along the lines of... One of the lines is like, if I cut off your arms and legs, would you still love me anyway? And it's... The whole song is sort of filled with this like really horrible physical violence, and the band themselves are themed around like sort of B horror movies, like So I think I possibly could have gone with some kind of like maybe like Dracula or something, but I think for me, for like accidentally coming across this quite early on in my sort of listening to music on the fly sort of situation. Yeah. Helena, Misfits.
Oh, wow.
I think that was actually post Danzig as well, because he was with them in the 80s, but not. Yeah. I think that was in the 90s, that song. So it wasn't even Good Misfits. How about you, man?
That's just rude about the Misfits, man. we're sorry, Misfits, if you happen to be listening. Unless you're listening to Danzig, in which case,
they know they reformed later on with like called the Real Misfits when they had Danzig back. Like,
anyway, mine actually changed this year. I'd say my favorite horror themed song, because it would have been the dubstep remix of "Spooky Scary Skeleton," because it is an absolute banger.
Oh, wow.
But there's a band called Mystic Prophecy who mostly do covers, and they have a song called Dracula, and it shuffled on my Spotify early into lockdown, and it is a glorious wailing battle metal nonsense song, and I really, really, really like it. I've listened to it too many times.
I think you've actually let me know about that song before, because
I have.
I had it on a playlist during a... during a get together, which was of course totally obeying all the rules and socially distance, sort of when the UK was getting a bit more sort of lax with that kind of thing, which looks like we're going the other way now, but never mind that. But you know, the I think it was during a game of 20 questions, you know, when you like the game that they're playing in Glorious Bastards, when you have to slap the card onto your head and somebody else has written a name on it, and you have to figure out who it was.
I was there for this, Ben. This was when recording.
Okay, yeah.
When we recorded Wonderland.
Oh, bloody hell.
It was that same day that we recorded Wonderland.
Episode 6, yeah. But then that song, because you let me know about it, it came on whilst one of the people was really struggling to get their
on their forehead, yeah.
Yeah. Which was Dracula,
yeah.
And the song itself uses the word Dracula multiple times, and they were just sat there sitting on, you know, 19 out of 20 guesses, just being like, I just don't know who could it possibly be, you know.
Well, the song in the background is Dracula every 15 seconds.
It's a fun song as well.
Oh, it's really good fun. I'd recommend it to everyone. Mystic Prophecy, go and listen.
We should definitely just link this stuff on Twitter.
It would do it. I did tweet a picture of Elliot's face. Sorry, Elliot.
Why his face?
Well, I said I would in the episode, so I tweeted him.
Oh, right, okay. So this one's a bit of a weird one. I had to like rephrase this a little bit. Which horror movie or book, doesn't matter, like, or any other medium, comic book, whatever, for you contains the worst death? So this can be something that like just like turns your stomach, upsets you, hits too close to home, or just like, you know, okay, grandiose, biggest death.
Okay, 18 plus, here we go. I think it's Saw 4, deep okay into the Saw franchise. There's a guy in, he's on a metal crucifix, and the sections of the crucifix can flip 180 degrees.
Oh, no.
And it does it every, I think it's like 20 seconds. So it does one of his wrists, then his other wrist, then an ankle, then the other ankle, and does this at the knees, the elbows, the shoulders, the hips, the waist, and then flips his head around. And it's just unbelievable. Just
that sounds
horrifying.
Awful, man. That's horrendous. I think I've only seen like Saw 2.
That's got the, I would have said it if it was a death, but the woman getting thrown into the pit full of hypodermic syringes.
Hmm.
That, oh, when she's digging through him, that one's bad. That's pretty bad.
I've never actually been like that big into like horror movies and gore fests and slasher flicks and all this kind of thing. I have watched quite a lot actually, but it was never really my go-to genre. But
yeah,
I definitely, as I get older and stuff, I'm enjoying them more. I don't know what that's about, but
I love them. Always have.
Yeah, there's something like really fun and freeing about them, I think. But for me, my answer is one that I watched really quite, I must have been maybe 12-ish.
Yeah.
And it's a movie, it's a really shit movie called Ghost Ship. You seen that?
I haven't seen it, but I am aware of it.
Okay. So, you know, some people end up on a haunted cruise ship and they start to die in, like, as you say, like Final Destination style deaths. Because it's haunted. And, you know, the deaths are okay. People falling down elevator shafts, that kind of thing, getting cut up by propellers, whatever. But the actual reason that it's haunted, if I'm remembering the movie correctly, the reason it's haunted is that during one of the evenings on this cruise liner that was filled with, you know, the wealthy and well-to-do, they were having some kind of, like, grand ball on the dance floor. And they're all, you know, all happily out on the dance floor, dancing and laughing and slow dancing. And there's a little girl being danced on her, like maybe her father's, possibly her grandfather's. You know, when children stand on the shoes so that they can be
dancing
with you like that. And whoever was the killer, I forget, or it may have just been an accident, had taken one of these big steel wires that is used to connect, you know, bits of the cruise liner together and whatever.
Yeah.
And stretched it with a pulley behind the dance floor. And when they released the lever, it whipped all the way across the dance floor really, really fast through everybody at roughly upper stomach height or a bit higher, I think, possibly even. It may have taken some people off at head height and that kind of thing. And it shot. The scene is shot from the perspective of the little girl.
Oh.
So she just watches everybody around her, like the hundreds of people around her, just get cut in half. But she's too small to get cut in half.
That's rank.
Yeah, man.
Oh, how old were you?
About 12.
I remember this is going to make me sound old. I was about 10, maybe slightly younger. And I was in bed and my VHS tape of Pokemon the first movie finished. I'd fallen asleep. It finished and it did and started rewinding. Right. And it woke me up and I opened my eyes and looked at the TV and it cut back to terrestrial TV. And Peter Jackson's Brain Dead was on TV. And it was the scene where the daughter's gluing the skin back on her elderly mother's cheek.
Oh.
And now I don't mind that. At that point, I was horrified, like genuinely scarred. And I didn't know what it was. I had no idea what that movie was, who it could have been made by, what it was called. And then, you know, the Lord of the Rings trilogy happened. I got a little bit older. I'd seen those movies. I wanted to see more of Peter Jackson's work. Lo and behold, there it is.
There
a thing
was.
That had tormented my dreams for years.
The childhood trauma was revealed.
Yeah, just unfolded in front of me. Wrong. I'm going to move this on. Would you rather be bitten by a werewolf, vampire, or zombie?
See, this is one of the... I largely left this one in because it was one of the funnier questions because it was so shit.
The answer is none.
So I think in this scenario, you have to be bitten by one. I don't know why. And I'm feeling vampire. That would be my instinct.
I was feeling werewolf, so maybe we're diametrically opposed.
Possibly. I don't know. Who the fuck's picking zombie? Like, why is zombie option 3?
I just like being part of something. I feel like being one of a horde would suit me.
People that are sort of done with life, but, you know, still want to, like, shamble on a bit longer, you know?
Can I replace this question? I'm going to quote a mutual friend of ours on a car journey. And we were doing those would you rathers. One of my favourites is, would you rather have normal-sized palms with tiny baby's fingers, or one of your feet is as long as the leg it's attached to? So that's the level of question we're operating at. And our dear friend said, all right, would you rather be a reverse vampire that can't go in the dark, or a reverse werewolf that every time you see a full wolf, you become a moon? And that is incredible.
The latter. suddenly there's a cosmic event because there's a wolf on the prowl.
There are so many questions. What constitutes a full wolf? Do you become a moon in that you are now orbiting the planet, or do you become a celestial body and orbit the planet? Do you just become a big ball of rock, but where you were? Like, there's so much to unpack.
I definitely interpreted it as full wolf meant not dog. And
even just a glimpse, a catch of its foot, and that's you gone. You are.
Yeah.
You mooned out, man.
Yeah. And maybe, like, taxidermied, like, heads on walls don't count either. But then also, the moon thing was, you definitely just become a moon where you're stood.
Dung! In your front room, your house is gone, but then so's the rest of the street, so that's fuck it.
So's the rest of the fucking country at that stage. Oh, man, fantastic.
Good. So you're going to be a vampire and a reverse werewolf. A wolf wear, if you will.
A wolf wear?
Where?
Yeah, I think the vampire one was just because at least I've been watching a fair amount of What We Do in the Shadows recently. And
so good.
It looks fun. Looks fun.
I think if you can add the fourth option, who would you be bitten by? Matt Berry. Then yeah, I'm down. Let's absolutely do that.
Matt Berry going around proliferating more Matt Berries by biting people.
You'd hear them coming.
Yes, I can hear you, Glenn Fandango.
No, I hear you.
Amazing. Right, have you ever had your tarot cards read, or your tarot read?
I have.
Did you take it seriously?
I didn't. I've got... one time was by a friend who... believes himself to be a spiritual medium. I'm not going to step on anyone's beliefs. He firmly believes it, and that's good for him. He asked if he could read my tarot, and I said, sure. That's that, really?
Yeah, that's that's fair.
And the other time was actually, I think it was Yule last year, when I was visiting you, and we were over at our friend's. And we carved a log and we did some nice things. And one of our lovely Patreons, Scott, his partner is a witch, not just on Halloween, all the time. And she read my tarot. Because that's the sort of thing you do, isn't it?
It is. And that's actually the same person that that read read mine as well, actually. And I was sort of thinking about it, and I think a lot of people use them as, like, if, you know, if the kind of people that actually do want to use them, they use it as a sort of, like, it seems from the outside, like a meditation, like an opportunity to look inwards so that they can interpret the cards.
Yeah.
It's like a tool that you use to figure out what you actually want from things, which, you know, all of the self-help industry is devoted towards as well. So it's not like it's something that's completely out there. Like, I wouldn't go as far as thinking that the, like, cards have any power. Like, I think it's very cool in Jonathan Strange and Mr. Norrell when those particular, like, I think they're called the Cards of Marseille. You know, when they're, you know, they've got a purpose in this story about magic. I think that's really cool. Often they've got really nice art and stuff, but it's
I own a couple of decks because I like the art.
Right, yeah.
And, I mean, I'm a live-action role player. They make fantastic props. They're really good for, you know, if they want to throw away NPC, non-player character, for anyone who's not sure what that means. They want you to just go in as someone, you know, pulling out a tarot deck and putting your cloak up and sitting in the tavern and being a bit weird is, you know, it's an easy, like, sudden drop character. But yeah, they can be really exceptionally beautiful.
For sure. And, like, in books and TV shows and movies and stuff, they are typically used as portentous, aren't they? They're very rarely taken the piss out of. Remember an old HBO show called Carnival?
Yes.
They were used quite strongly in that. I just think they're quite a good, like, plot device. You know, if we're talking about writing stories on this podcast and stuff, something like that is actually really intriguing that it exists. It's less interesting when people start like reading self-help books to each other. But no, if you see it in the same line.
The tarot actually are in the Warhammer 40,000 universe.
Oh.
There's a thing called the Imperial Tarot that the Inquisitors use. So they're like the space witch hunters.
Yeah.
But it's used quite well in a trilogy of books I like called The Inquisition War, because the characters on them, you say if there's a card that's the Inquisitor, and the main character, Jacques Draco, sees it as himself. Ooh. But then as he looks at the cards, and they're linked to you psychically, what represents different things changes. And there are things that he knows that he's in danger because, like, something psychically knows that this person is a traitor, or this person is actually an alien or is an assassin. Or so it's used as a really interesting device there as an actual psychic link, and, you know, being linked to some greater divine plan rather than telling the future.
Also kind of cool that it's obviously that's a science fiction setting as well, isn't
it?
So it's something that's quite old world to be found in the sort of future is fascinating.
I'm just looking at the next question, Ben.
Yeah.
I think we're trying to get OJ Simpson as a guest because he wrote a book about this.
He did write a book about it, I think.
Yeah, Ben, if you were going to commit a murder, how would you do it?
Right. I really think I actually couldn't stop myself from going full Godfather 1.
Oh, no.
And just, you know, like, have, you know, invite them to dinner and all the rest of it, and then have a you know, like, a public place so they know they're okay. This has got to be someone that's really fucking wronged me. I should preempt this with. This isn't just like, I've decided I like killing people. That's not what this is.
Oh, you've gone full Dennis Reynolds. They're my tools!
My tools!
It's for binding equipment. I like to bind. I like to be bound.
Always Sunny, man. It's so funny. You know, go full Godfather. Go, you know, get halfway through the meal, then go to the loo. Feel for the gun, you know, the snub-nosed pistol with the grip on it. You know, the gripped up, the taped up grip. Sorry. Come out and just blap.
Cook a fool. Yeah.
And then drop it.
God.
I there's something about it. Like, you know, you can fantasize. I've never been really been the kind of person that, like, fantasizes, like, elaborate deaths for people.
No.
Well, apart from my writing, I guess. Just, you know, like, if somebody wrongs me, I don't usually think out like a source style ending for them.
No.
It's more that you know, I feel like I would quite like to just get like quick and violent vengeance.
See, looking at the quote, I'm going to get too real now, but like the real answer to that question for me is that if someone had hurt someone I care about, you know, one of my siblings, my mum, you know, even one of my close friends, I don't think I'd be like, I'm going to kill them. I need to make a knife out of ice and then it will melt. And I think I would just go in, and if I killed someone, it would probably be because I didn't stop rather than because I'd meant to kill someone.
Less premeditation.
Yeah. I'm a simple man, Ben. I don't plan.
I think especially this is a bit real, but like especially with the, you know, we're sort of joking and laughing around and stuff, but like people, like recently there was that horrible incident where somebody was decapitated in the street in France.
Yeah.
And shit like that does just fucking happen sometimes. And, you know, it takes a while for you know, law enforcement and all the rest of it to find these people and deal with them. Like, not talking politically or anything like that, just like, you know, if somebody decides that they want to go on a rampage, it's really, we're not set up as a society to deal with it.
No.
And that's why it's terrifying when it does happen. So things like, as soon as you start thinking, you know, like the taped up grip and dropping it so that they can't tie you to the weapon and stuff, as soon as you start getting down the premeditated route, it's another level, isn't it? Like, it's not just like a random or even just extreme act of violence. It's, you're really going into how to live your life afterwards.
Yeah.
And it, yeah, it takes it from horror to thriller, I think.
Humanity is capable of some really, truly awful things, and we seem to forget, as humans, how terrible we can be. And I think it's because a lot of the horrible stuff we do is quite normalised, but when we get these bursts of, like, there was this kid, I think he was about 15, stood on a train platform, a guy stepped off the train and stabbed him in the heart.
What?
This was in Uxbridge, so just up the road from me.
Fuck.
This is weeks ago, maybe a month now, that a kid got stabbed in High Wycombe. That's literally where I live. And just crossing the road, two other teenagers came out and jumped him. And you have no idea if they've been planning that or if they just went out to do that. And you can't know. You can't possibly know what's going on in someone's brain. Weird. Scary.
And, you know, is there possibly something to, that the real world can feel like that? This, like, horrible, very suddenly cold and dangerous place that people really enjoy horror because it titillates all that same level of panic and fear receptors.
Yeah.
But in a way that's enclosed and safe.
I think it's all catharsis, isn't it? A lot of the things we choose to experience. Even going on a roller coaster, you do it because that fear that you might fling out of it and become jam on Thorpe Park's pavement. it's all part of the enjoyment. Like, whooshing around like a bird in flight is great, but it's that thing of, God, if one bolt goes, that's it for me, and I'm living dangerously. We're naturally quite low on the adrenaline we should get because we're not going toe-to-toe with a leopard, only holding a stick and a bit of flint.
Yeah.
You've got to get it somewhere.
You've got to find it. That whole one bolt going thing. I think I'll come back to that. Remind me about the bolt thing.
Okay.
Yeah. So we've had the murders. So Nick would just lose his shit.
Yeah.
and I would reference Francis Ford Coppola.
You would.
Have you got a favorite? So this is where we try to go across into the fiction stuff again. Stay away from that dark shit. Favorite fictional serial killer. So no Wayne Gacy's or anything.
Oh, you're gonna, people are gonna be disappointed, but it's Carcer from Terry Pratchett's Night Watch.
Oh, good answer.
He
good answer.
a lot of serial killers in stories. I mean, like, Hannibal Lecter's an incredible character. You know, he's an exception. But a lot of the time, they're just these crazed lunatics. But Carcer genuinely scares me when I read him. Because he's sinister in a way that I believe. And in a way that I would find sinister in real life.
Yeah.
Now, there's a line that you and I quote to each other fairly often, which is, Mr. Vimes, I can see your house from here. Which is completely innocuous, but when you know, like Carcer probably does, that Sam's wife is giving birth at that time, and everything that Sam cares about in the world, other than, you know, being a policeman, is in that building. There is so much weight to those words, and it makes him genuinely frightening, because he never said, I'm going to go and hurt your wife and unborn son. He just said, oh, look, I know where they are. You're not a step ahead of me. I know. And it just, to me, it just makes the character. Terry could do it. He could write Terry a funny character. He could write a terrifying character.
So. There's a retrospective happening for Pratchett's work relatively soon, I think, with his daughter Rihanna, Neil Gaiman, and his name escapes me, but the guy that was really helpful to with him, like helping him write the last few books, and was a producer on Good Omens. I forget his name, but he was like really helpful to Terry Pratchett in his last few years. And I was so excited when I heard about it, and it sold out instantly.
Oh man, of course.
It's just, I would love to be in that room. I wonder if they'll put it online, but it'd be really interesting to hear that group of people talking about his work.
About him, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Because the man was a genius, straight up.
Right. We're getting stuck on Pratchett. This always happens to us.
Yeah, so far we've had Lord of the Rings, Pratchett. We haven't had Star Wars yet.
Well, that's good. Your favourite fictional serial killer is Darth Vader, isn't it?
Darth Vader, yeah. Done. Yeah, nailed it. So this is one that took me by surprise a little bit, and it's a bit of an off-the-beaten-path choice. As I say, I don't really read much horror, and I've read a fair few thrillers, really, but not much horror, like beyond Lovecraft and that, which is more to do with awe-inspiring horror from another dimension. It's not really human, and you know, at a base level. So I'm a big fan of the writer Warren Ellis, who is, I think it's probably fair to say, primarily a comic book writer, but he has written
I'd say so.
TV shows and books and all sorts. But he wrote a book in 2013 called The Gun Machine, and it was excellent. It was a hard-boiled detective, you know, gumshoe type thing, which I love that kind of stuff, love that kind of thriller, of this dude going around New York trying to catch a serial killer who had effectively executed hundreds of unsolved killings over the last 10 years. And the book starts, I'm not going to ruin the book, but the book pretty much near the start reveals this guy's trophy room, where every weapon that he's used to kill all these people over these years is laid out in like a mandala shape.
Shape.
And the whole thing is him trying to figure out what the relevance of that is, trying to use it to get to know the serial killer, trying to get under his skin. The hunter, as the serial killer is known, is effectively a Native American vengeful spirit in a way.
Oh, wow.
He's effectively trying to, he's using all these killings to weave a spell in order to eject the white European settlers from New York.
Holy hell. That sounds great.
It is out. I was expecting, you know, something, I guess, but I wasn't expecting that when I read it. And I actually read it when I was in, I was in Japan, and I did a fair amount of like waiting at train stations, going between places, and it's only about 300 or so pages, so it didn't last long. and it was a great book, and it's really stuck with me. So, thanks, Warren. Yeah. Okay. Last question. We're on to our last question.
Oh, wow.
How do you think you're going to die?
Right, it's about to get morbid.
it hasn't been already. It's been...
No, it's been light and airy. So most of you listening won't know this. I'm a type 1 diabetic. And I have been since I was 18 months old. Well, since I was born. They figured it out when I was 18 months old. Honestly, I think over time I will deteriorate because of it. I didn't look after myself that well as a teenager. I wish I had. I do a lot better now, but I'm paying the price. And I think gradually I'll become less capable. Or, alternatively, I'll have a drug-fueled sex heart attack because I am a rock star and all that.
Does the one not lead to the other? Do we not eventually reach a stage where you occasionally just take a swing at it?
I think that might be true. No, honestly, I think I will. I think eventually being unwell, as I am innately, will cause some part of me to fail. I don't think it's going to be soon, necessarily, but I think would be sooner than for some.
Well...
What about you, man?
We're all going to die one day, but when/if that happens, the world's going to be a far worse place. So look after yourself.
I'll do my best. What about you, man?
Plane crash, definitely.
Really?
Oh yeah, hell yeah.
You do fly 3 times a day, don't you? Yeah, you won't walk to the shops, guys. Just charters a jet.
Off in my... I don't even know the names of jets, man. I don't know nothing about aeroplanes, which is possibly why they freak me out. Back to that one bolt thing.
Oh, God.
Bill Burr's got this funny bit where he takes the piss out of people that say that all it takes is one bolt in a helicopter, you know, to be loose or whatever, for the whole thing to crash and everybody die. And indeed, there are a lot of helicopter fatalities. But he's like, that's the same of anything, as you said earlier, roller coaster, plane, car, like one wrong bolt in most mechanisms that we use with alarming regularity, and we're just dead.
Yeah, that's why it's called a wrong bolt, isn't it? That's just kind of... Some people say, oh, too much of a good thing will kill you. Too much of anything will kill you. That's why it's too much. by definition.
But yeah, I wasn't always afraid of flying, actually. It's I was in a very near miss when I was a teenager.
Mm.
In a landing. And... ever since then, it sort of started to boil up, and I used to fly a lot for work and all the rest of it, but it gradually just got worse and worse. Like it was never taking off. I really enjoy taking off. It was always coming into land. I couldn't get over the fact that I was in a cylinder pointed at the earth, flying about 700 miles an hour.
Good grief.
And it, yeah, so it would take me like a day or two to unwind after a landing. Which really sucks, because I love traveling. I love going to different countries and experiencing cultures and stuff. Which is why I do it anyway. I do fly. But every time I get on a plane, I have to be... In order to be okay with it, I have to come to the peace with myself that I know that I'm going to die on the plane. So by the time the doors close, I've given up control. It's gone.
Very I'm much not like a roller coaster. Ask you to go on holiday with me at any time soon, man. Don't worry.
Hey, man. Sometimes it's worth it, and then sometimes it's really not.
Yeah, I think it's life, baby. It's all a gamble.
Yeah, yeah. I feel like this has been a bit of a downer. Do we need to bring this up a little bit?
I think maybe we could.
Yeah. Have you got? We didn't really like. I think we should just add in some questions about. Halloween horror movies that you're going to watch? What are you going to watch?
So my big one, I always do Evil Dead 2 and Army of Darkness this time of year. Sam Raimi just gets it, man. He knows what he's doing, and they're so funny. Absolutely hysterical. They're not horror films at all, really. They are just goofy comedy films with my man Bruce Campbell in. So that's where I'll be.
So I'm actually like a total fucking... simpleton when it comes to this kind of thing. So, is it Evil Dead, the bit with the tree? Is that
yes.
Evil Dead?
So, oh, okay. Evil Dead 2 is actually just a remake of Evil Dead 1, but with the budget they needed to make the film. And funny, it's got more jokes. And
oh, that's cool. I think I've only seen the first one.
I would happily stick them on and we'll watch them together over Discord.
Yeah, man, we should do it. We're actually going to be, again, social distance and all the rest of it, obeying the rules, and unless they change, of course, in which case we'll have to change our plans. But just a couple of people and I are going to watch Jurassic Park. It's got no Halloween significance at all, but we were talking about like movies we wanted to watch, and you know, people were saying Nightmare Before Christmas and Tim Burton stuff, and and genuinely spooky and scary stuff as well, like deliberately. And then it just kind of came up in conversation that Jurassic Park is one of the best movies ever made.
Oh, man, yeah, absolutely.
By, you know, an auteur at the top of his craft, great budget, great idea, you know, Michael Crichton based idea and stuff. So we're going to watch Jurassic Park. We'll probably watch some sort of like spooky stuff as well, but plan is to have some fun.
No, speaking of movie, I've had a craving for Dread for about 2 weeks. I think I need to sit down. I love that movie.
Dread's so good. Wasn't it strange? Do you remember when... I may have sort of misremembered this a little bit, but when Dread came out, The Raid came out roughly the same time?
So The Raid was a couple of months beforehand, and a few people said, oh, well, they've just copied The Raid, but, you know, it's impossible for two studios to have... Like, why would you say, oh, there's an Asian movie just come out? What if... Which comic book characters can we afford, and would any of them suit ripping off that film? I think it's just quite cheap to make a movie in an apartment block, because there are loads of them.
Right.
And that's how it happened. It just... Yeah, they did really coincide, and very, very close together. Both really, really good as well.
Both fantastic. I remember hearing that... Some Welsh dude did the choreography in The Raid.
Yeah.
And just like a few, like I'm a bit uncultured when it comes to martial arts movies and stuff, but it was fantastic. I really enjoyed it. And then, as you say, a few months later, Dread comes out and we get to see Carl Urban's chin.
Man, that's some fine chin acting.
He is excellent. I mean, he's doing so well at the moment. Like, I don't know if you've watched it, but he's playing Billy Butcher in The Boys, in Amazon's TV show version of that, which is based off a comic book, which I think we both read. Have you read The Boys?
I have read The Boys.
Yes.
I'm a big fan of The Boys.
Big fan. But he is so fucking good as Billy Butcher. It's just an absolute ride with him.
I can see it.
And yeah, oh man, really enjoying that. Well, I'm kind of hoping that we haven't like upset people.
Well,
with the way of the world, really. But
it's a Halloween episode. It's meant to be a bit grey. It hasn't been too grey for you all. I am going to say I want to do an extra doubly big giant thank you, which are definitely functioning words, to our Patreons. We've got some people who've been really, really supporting us over the course of the first season. Some of you listening may not know that we have a Patreon, but if you have a look for us, The Tiny Bookcase, on Patreon and on our Twitter, it's pinned, you can support the show. You don't have to give much, and anything you do give is incredible. It does give you access to a few things, like bonus episodes, where you can hear us talk a bit more broadly about the things that amuse us, and we play a lot of games together and just have a generally good time. But it would be incredible to see some of you there, or even just on our socials. Give us some love, leave a review somewhere. You don't even have to be nice. Is great interaction. So
yeah, that's
you.
A big one. If you could, yeah, definitely thank you everyone that's doing that. And also just generally people that are listening, it's awesome. But if you are listening, then please do put a review up on whatever platform you're listening to us on, if possible. It's super helpful for us to grow audience, and we'd really appreciate it. Thank you for everything you've done already.
And if you did any of those things, you could be thanked in the same manner as these three. Oh, heart,
dearest of muscles, you beat most fondly for these three men. For without them, we would starve. Without the lifeblood of Matthew McLaren, what would we sup? The bread that stands as body of Gary Laird, without which we would starve. And the hot air that Scott Byrne constantly pours out, stopping us from freezing. Thank you, guys.
Well, I can quite firmly say that hasn't helped us in the slightest. But they're still alive, and that means stories for me. Now, I wouldn't recommend leaving until sunrise, so pull up a magic chair. By the way, while you're here, there are some spells you could research. The Twitter spell, which can be found at Bookcase Tiny, is most useful. And the Tiny Bookcase can be found on Patreon. Now wiggle your fingers and get casting. We've got a long night ahead of us.